From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. President Obama lauds Africa's progress but cautions it rests on a fragile foundation. President Obama wrapped up an Africa trip with an unprecedented speech to the 54-nation African Union in Addis Ababa, hailing the continent's progress.
The world must recognize Africa's extraordinary progress. Today, Africa is one of the fastest-growing regions in the world. Africa's middle class is projected to grow to more than 1 billion consumers, hundreds of millions of mobile phones, surging access to the internet. Africans are beginning to leapfrog old technologies into new prosperity.
But he warned such progress can be sustained only through continued development, democracy, and good governance.
Nothing will unlock Africa's economic potential more than ending the cancer of corruption. And you are right that it is not just a problem of Africa, it is a problem of those who do business with Africa. It is not unique to Africa. Corruption exists all over the world, including in the United States. But here in Africa, corruption drains billions of dollars from economies that can't afford to lose billions of dollars.
He noted the continent's gains from a plummeting HIV/AIDS infection rate to millions being lifted out of poverty, but cautioned Africa's progress rests on a fragile foundation, underscoring the need for human rights protections, free elections, and criticizing leaders who refuse to step aside. Media reports say at least 25 killed after suspected Boko Haram fighters attacked the northeast Nigerian village of Dil in northeast Borno State. Witnesses say the attack occurred Monday afternoon when fighters entered the village about 250 kilometers south of the state capital, Maiduguri. Local vigilantes and security forces resisted the attack and claimed to have killed several of the militants. This is VOA News. Turkey, with fresh NATO backing for its cross-border strikes against Islamic State fighters in Syria, targeted suspected Kurdish rebel positions in southeast Turkey on Tuesday. Two warplanes hitting positions belonging to the banned Kurdistan Workers' Party, PKK. NATO said the security of the alliance is indivisible and it stands in strong solidarity with Ankara. Amanda Paul, analyst with the European Policy Center, says Turkey requested the meeting.
I think the main purpose is to give them some reassurance in terms of their bombing campaign in Syria and northern Iraq, that they won't be accused of violating international law in the after event. So they wanted to cover their backs, basically, by having NATO say, OK, it's fine, we agree, we understand your security situation and the concerns you have for territorial integrity, so go ahead, it's OK.
The United States Monday said it's working with Ankara on an attack plan to clear Islamic State insurgents from northern Syria. Lawyers for a convicted Israeli spy, Jonathan Pollard, Tuesday said U.S. officials have decided to free him in November after 30 years in federal prison. Pollard, sentenced to life in prison in 1987 for turning over suitcases of military secrets to Israel, including details on U.S. intelligence, weapons, and radar jamming equipment. Michael Fishback, regional analyst with Virginia's Randolph-Macon College, says the decision is a milestone in U.S.-Israel relations.
The Pollard issue has been a thorn in the side for both parties for three decades. And the fact that Pollard is going to be released at all, let alone at this time, is simply a breathtaking announcement.
While Secretary of State John Kerry denies the pending release was intended to placate Israel over its objections to the Iran nuclear deal, Fishback says the timing, coupled with continued strong opposition to the release, makes the denial untenable. U.S. prosecutors have charged an admirer of Islamic State with plotting to bury a bomb at a Florida beach and blow it up by remote control. The Justice Department saying Harlem Suarez was charged Tuesday with attempting to use a weapon of mass destruction. A Libyan court issued a death sentence Tuesday to Saif al-Islam, son of Muammar Gaddafi, in connection with the deadly response to the 2011 uprising that pushed Mr. Gaddafi from power. The Tripoli court also sentenced eight others to death, including former spy chief Abdel al-Sanusi and former Prime Minister Baghdadi al-Mahmoudi. The U.S. Tuesday welcomed the decision by the Gambian government to release several relatives of the December 30, 2014 failed coup plot. U.S. spokesman John Kirby said the family members have been held without charge, but he called for the release of radio journalist Alagi Abdulli Cisse, who disappeared July 17th after what Washington called a two-week-long period of arbitrary detention. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Boateng in Washington. Today's Wednesday, July 29th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. President Obama challenges Africa on a number of issues, including corruption.
When someone has to pay a bribe just to start a business or go to school or get an official to do the job they're supposed to be doing anyway, that's not the African way. It undermines the dignity of the people you represent.
Ethiopia's foreign minister says President Obama's historic speech to the African Union was given in a dignified manner. South Sudan says it will lodge a protest for not being invited when IGAD leaders met with President Obama. The new United States Special Envoy to the Great Lakes region speaks out about Burundi's crisis.
The U.S. government continues to have grave concerns about the precarious situation in Burundi and the conditions for democracy, and our request from the beginning for all Burundians to have access to free and fair elections.
Thomas Perello is the newly appointed U.S. Special Envoy to the Africa's Great Lakes region. A Nigerian doctor volunteers to join the fight against Boko Haram and corruption targets refugees in South Africa. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. In his farewell speech, capping a historic trip to Kenya and Ethiopia, President Barack Obama Tuesday hailed Africa's extraordinary progress while noting that such progress can only be sustained through continued development and democracy for all. VOA White House correspondent Arul Pandey has more from African Union headquarters in Addis Ababa.
I stand before you as a proud American. I also stand before you as the son of an African.
With those words, Barack Obama, the first sitting U.S. president to address the African Union, encapsulated his personal interest in seeing Africa's continued economic and developmental growth as it sheds a history of colonialism.
A half century into this independence era, it is long past time to put aside old stereotypes of an Africa forever mired in poverty and conflict. The world must recognize Africa's extraordinary progress.
Mr. Obama hailed the continent's gains, from a plummeting HIV/AIDS infections rate to millions of Africans being lifted out of poverty, while championing the U.S. role in the progress. President Obama highlighted efforts to boost trade and U.S. initiatives focused on food security, increasing access to electricity, and supporting African entrepreneurship. While not naming China, Mr. Obama emphasized what sets the U.S. apart in its investment in Africa.
Economic relationships can't simply be about building countries' infrastructure with foreign labor or extracting Africa's natural resources. Real economic partnerships have to be a good deal for Africa. They have to create jobs and capacity for Africans.
But the American leader cautioned the continent's impressive progress, quote, rests on a fragile foundation, with hundreds of millions of Africans still living in extreme poverty without access to basic infrastructure. In a message he also honed during his visit to Kenya, President Obama noted that nothing will unlock Africa's economic potential more than ending, quote, the cancer of corruption.
And when someone has to pay a bribe just to start a business or go to school, or get an official to do the job they're supposed to be doing anyway, that's not the African way. It undermines the dignity of the people you represent.
The U.S. president received a rousing response when he talked of how progress in Africa is dependent on democracy, which he noted is not just the holding of formal elections.
When journalists are put behind bars for doing their jobs, or activists are threatened as governments crack down on civil society, then you may have democracy in name, but not in substance.
Audience members laughed as Mr. Obama said he didn't understand African leaders who refused to step aside when their terms end, noting his own time in office was coming to a close.
Under our Constitution, I cannot run again. I can't run again. I actually think I'm a pretty good president. I think if I ran, I could win. But I can't.
President Obama ended his speech and landmark trip to East Africa, echoing his remarks in Kenya, urging the empowerment of women and girls. He noted respect for human rights, equality, and dignity of all people is the true path to progress and opportunity, not just in Africa, but all over the world. Aru Pandey, VOA News, Addis Ababa.
Ethiopia's foreign minister says President Barack Obama's historic speech to the African Union was presented in a dignified manner because Africa needs genuine partners, not someone who patronizes the continent. Tedros Adhanom described President Obama as a wise and candid man. During his meeting with Ethiopian Prime Minister Hailemariam Desalegn, President Obama urged the Ethiopian government to allow journalists and opposition parties to operate more freely. Foreign Minister Adhanom says Ethiopia's democracy is a nascent democracy that is still under construction. He said Ethiopia will continue to listen to genuine friends and partners like the United States to help improve its young democracy.
You know, the message to our continent was very important. Of course, some may agree, some may disagree, but it doesn't matter because, you know, he was speaking his mind. And one thing that really made me happy was when he started telling what his suggestions are, he said, I'm saying this as a friend and as a partner. And that was very, very kind of him, because we don't want to have someone who patronizes us. We need partners, as he had actually said it in his speech. We need to have our dignity. And he said it in a very dignified way.
The day before, President Obama met with your prime minister and talked about the need for your government to open up the political space and loosen restrictions on, say, the opposition and the media. Can you give me a reaction to that?
Yeah. He raised that issue, and as I said earlier, it was in a very understanding way. He even said, no two countries can be the same, and we're not asking you to be the same as some of the mature democracies, in a very humble way. Not only because he had said it, we also believe that we have challenges, we have problems, because we believe that our democracy is a nascent democracy. We are in the process of building it, and you would expect some challenges in a nascent democracy. So his remarks are not actually unfounded. So democracy is always under construction. You have to nurture it regularly. As you know, Ethiopia is a very, very, very diverse nation. And in order to unite the diversity and sustain growth, we need democracy.
Mr. Foreign Minister, as you mentioned, he talked candidly, and one of the candid talks he did was he asked African leaders to respect the term limits as inscribed in their individual national constitutions.
Yeah, that's very candid. So, you know, all countries should respect their own laws and their own, traditions. But there is one thing that people really debate on. The issue is whether, the majority and whether the people at large are in support of it, because people made a law and they can change the law. So that should also be taken into perspective. But the most important question here is whether the question to revise a constitution to even increase the term limit is a genuine and popular question from the people or not. As long as it's genuine, as long as it's popular, it's fine with me, because we have the two systems. Some countries have term limits, some countries don't. Which one is correct? I cannot tell.
Tedros Adhanom is Ethiopia's foreign minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Addis Ababa. Today is Wednesday, July 29th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 14 and a half minutes past the hour. South Sudan's foreign minister says his government is disappointed after it was left out of a meeting of IGAD leaders with President Barack Obama to discuss the South Sudan conflict. Barnum Admiral Benjamin says the Juba government will today send an official petition to both the African Union and IGA for breaching protocol by refusing to inform or invite the South Sudanese government to the meeting with President Obama.
While we appreciate and welcome the move of President Obama to try and help in the resolution of the conflict in South Sudan, we appreciate their contribution. at the regional meeting, which was said to be held in the name of IGAD, an African Union, the Republic of South Sudan, being a member of IGAD and a member of the African Union, was not invited. And I think that is very disappointing on the part of IGAD chairperson as well as the African Union, because this republic should have been invited. If you talk about the issue of South Sudan, that you want to bring peace, and you don't invite the leadership of that country, then that is a difficulty for even peace process to proceed sort of normally.
So when do you plan, when does your government plan to officially present a petition of your disappointment, as you put it?
The government will do this within the next 24 hours, definitely. We will write officially to the chairperson of IGAD, and the chair of IGAD now is the Democratic Republic of Ethiopia. So I will send the protest to the Minister of Foreign Affairs of the Federal Republic of Ethiopia. I'm sure they could have advised President Obama that there is a protocol involved in this, and that is President Salva Kiir Mayardit is an elected president of the Republic of South Sudan by the people of South Sudan. And if you are to talk about South Sudan and you don't invite the sovereign authority of that country, it is really very disappointing.
The international community seemed to have expressed concern about their disappointment on the current crisis or the current conflict in the country, especially when they said South Sudan had so much goodwill from the international community and from everywhere else when you gained independence from Sudan.
Actually, we are very thankful and appreciate the goodwill from the international community. But what is fortunate further is that this international community is not listening to what the elected democratic government of the Republic of South Sudan is doing towards peace. The President Salva Kiir Mayardit and his government has made tremendous compromises in as far as the peace process is concerned from the day one of December 2013. And it seems that they are not listening to the efforts done by the government. Secondly, I think it is unfair on the side of the international community to continue with this moral equivalency between an elected leadership and a rebel movement. I think this is unfair. It actually makes it a very disappointing diplomatic sort of gesture to the people of South Sudan, who have fought so hard to get their own country.
Barnaba Morale Benjamin is South Sudan's foreign minister. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Juba. The new U.S. Special Envoy to Africa's Great Lakes region says the United States continues to be concerned about what he calls the precarious situation in Burundi and the conditions for democracy there. Thomas Perillo was appointed earlier this month by President Barack Obama. He is currently in Burundi, where he has been meeting with all stakeholders in the Burundian crisis brought on by President Pierre Nkurunziza's decision to seek a controversial third term.
The U.S. government continues to have grave concerns about the precarious situation in Burundi and the conditions for democracy, and our request from the beginning for all Burundians to have access to free and fair elections. Over the weekend, Secretary Kerry said the electoral results were, quote, the culmination of a deeply flawed electoral process marked by violence and a disregard for the civil and human rights of the citizens of Burundi, and President Obama expressed his concern in Nairobi, Kenya this weekend about the state of democracy here in Burundi as well. As with other donor partners, these developments have forced our government to review those programs already suspended and those that remain currently active. We also demand an immediate resumption of mediated dialogue with all issues on the table, as has been previously discussed. The United States remains deeply committed to the people of Burundi and the people of the Great Lakes region, and we look forward to finding solutions in the days, weeks, and months ahead to advance a peaceful, democratic, and prosperous Burundi and Great Lakes region.
On the question of opposition leader Agathon Rwasa, who, after criticizing the controversial July 21st presidential election, decided to take his seat in parliament, Mr. Perillo says he has met with Mr. Rwasa as well as other stakeholders.
He is certainly one of many people that we met with and engaged with on this trip, but we are looking at a dialogue that engages with all the stakeholders in this process and continues to ensure that we not only continue a dialogue on the way forward for elections, but also for the freedom of press, freedom of expression, and the full range of human rights that are demanded here in Burundi. We are looking at the full range of policy options, including whether we will continue with existing programs and also tools that would be both targeted at individuals and the country, but we are hoping to find a positive path forward.
Thomas Perello is the newly appointed U.S. Special Envoy to Africa's Great Lakes region. He spoke with Tabita Mukamusani of U.S. Kirundi Service. A U.S.-based Nigerian doctor says he will give up his practice to go fight Boko Haram in Nigeria if the Nigerian government gives him the authorization. Dr. Peregrino Brahma is currently a clinical instructor at State University of New York downstate. He tells Ricky Schreier there are thousands more young people in Nigeria like him who are ready to make the ultimate sacrifice to fight Boko Haram. He says the group he co-founded, Every Nigerian Do Something, has more than 15,000 members who are ready to act if the Nigerian government arm them and give them basic training.
As civilians, we cannot get into the battlefield unless we have been authorized by the military. Yeah, we want to go in as patriots to assist the military, because the military can't contain this, because our military is overwhelmed. So Nigerian military needs help, and we have thousands of youth. There are thousands of youth in Borno, the civilian JTF, hunters, you know, who are tested and trusted, and then around Nigeria who are ready to go and risk our lives to assist in liberating these communities. Because, you know, it's unthinkable when you imagine the lives of people in these communities who continue to be vandalized, brutalized, and raped by Boko Haram. So we want permission, because we can't work, we can't go in, we can't mobilize to go in without the government.
What about the civilian JTF, as you mentioned, who already are working and going in? Do they not have government authorization? How would this be different from the civilian JTF?
Yes, the civilian JTF are mainly working around Maiduguri, the capital, right? Now, in other areas, they have not been authorized weapons, but we need them, like happened in Iraq, where the Iraqi government gave civilians guns and said, go ahead, you two take this battle.
You guys want weapons from the government, and the civilian JTF doesn't have them, is that correct?
Yes, the civilian JTF doesn't have weapons. Each time, in fact, I believe the way the army has been using the civilian JTF is not authorized. Because the army takes our boys along with sticks and stones to participate in the war. And they go along and they work brilliantly with machetes and sticks and stones. But whereas we need to be made a fighting force, and the army has on occasion said they will make us a fighting force, but they've never done it.
When you don't train someone in warfare, don't you risk extrajudicial killings with things like this?
This is the reason why we are asking for the military's cooperation in this and the cooperation of the government. Because the military has been involved in rights violations, civilians have been involved in rights violations. With the military being involved, the military will give training to the civilians before we go in. They will teach us some certain principles of operation.
If that's the case, why don't you just join the military?
Because a lot of people are ready to volunteer to clean up, but are not ready for a life of a soldier. And this happens all over the world.
Dr. Peregrino Breiman is co-founder of the group Every Nigerian Do Something. He was speaking to Ricky Shryak from New York. Corruption is pervasive throughout the asylum process in South Africa, says a report published this month. Almost a third of asylum seekers and refugees have to pay bribes for correct documentation, which violates the Refugees Act. Rights groups said incompetence within South Africa's Home Affairs Department is contributing to the number of undocumented foreigners who have recently become the focus of a government cleanup operation. Gillian Parker reports from Johannesburg.
Asylum seekers and refugees experience significant corruption involving multiple actors, according to a report by Lawyers for Human Rights and the African Centre for Migration and Society. Refugee reception offices arbitrarily issue documents to asylum seekers and refugees looking to renew their documents, according to the report, which is based on interviews with over 900 applicants. Corruption is most pervasive at the refugee reception office in Marabastad, Pretoria, with over two-thirds of applicants experiencing it. If you cannot pay, rejection is almost guaranteed. Kebelu Zedepani from Corruption Watch, a non-profit platform for reporting corruption, said extortion methods are evolving.
Our undercover operations are revealing new types of corruption that we hadn't kind of taken notice of. And these include corruption such as people having to pay translators or translators putting prices on the type of stories that they can sell you. So the more money you have, the better your story. If you don't have any money, we're going to tell a fake story.
South Africa is one of the top global recipients of asylum seekers and received over 70,000 applicants in 2013, similar to the number in the European Union or United States. The large demand on the asylum system has allowed corruption to thrive, argues Laura Landau, researcher at ICMS.
The argument here is that Home Affairs and the way in which it's dealing with immigrants and refugees is shifting from one that is based on law, based on policy, to one that is based on profit. If we're talking about reforming the asylum system, any kind of legal or policy reform is going to be ineffective if you're not going to be able to counter the deep-seated corruption and the logic of profit-making that has taken root here.
Corruption coupled with chaotic application processes increases the risk of asylum seekers remaining undocumented. If they are arrested, they could be sent back to the countries from which they fled. Gillian Parker, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with volleyball. Hosts Egypt dismissed Morocco in three straight sets as Tunisia edged Algeria 3-2 in the semifinals at the Africa Men's Volleyball Championships in Cairo on Tuesday night. In classification matches, Rwanda edged Kenya 3-2, while Cameroon beat Botswana 3-0. Turning to football, Sudan's El Khartoum beat Rwanda's APR 4-0 as Kenya's Gor Mahia edged South Sudan's Malakia 2-1 at the Council of Eastern Central Africa Football Association's SEKAFA Kagame Club Championship in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania on Tuesday. Today, Wednesday, in an all-Tanzania mainland showdown, Young Africans and Azam face off. Then Uganda's Kampala City Council Authority encounters Sudan's El Ahli Shandi. Meanwhile, hosts Ethiopia pipped Cameroon 2-1 in the return leg of their Africa FIFA Under-20 Women's World Cup qualifier in Bahir Dar. Ethiopia advanced on a 2-1 aggregate. The Democratic Republic of Congo dismissed Namibia 5-0 on aggregate. Algeria pipped Burkina Faso 3-2. Zambia outplayed Tanzania 4-0. Nigeria mauled Liberia 14-1. South Africa powered Botswana 9-1. Equatorial Guinea dismissed Mali 4-0. And Ghana outplayed Senegal 8-0. Turning to athletics, Mozambique's Kurt Kuto clocked 50.43 seconds to win the 400-meter hurdles at the Confederation of African Athletics Grand Prix War Relays in Delta State, South Nigeria. Nigeria's Amaka Ogegbunam won the women's 400-meter hurdles in 56.26 seconds. Nigerian Patience Okon prevailed in women's 400 meters in 51.78 seconds, while Ghana's Emmanuel Dasor triumphed in the men's race in 46.14 seconds. Nigeria's Igweru Ogo again won the 100 meters in 10.23 seconds. Britain's Nathan Fox triumphed in triple jump in 16.65 meters, while Nigerian Okpara Tedas won the long jump and high jump. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. A court in Libya issued a death sentence Tuesday to Saif al-Islam, the son of Muammar Gaddafi, in connection with the deadly response to the 2011 uprising that pushed Mr. Gaddafi from power. That is it for this Wednesday, July 29th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Mark Oldman, along with our engineer Jim Harmon, I'm James Button in Washington saying, have a nice day, Africa.
Hello, I'm Linor Moudou. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.